Hello, I'm Eric Walenza, founder of IoT1, and this is the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Every episode, I interview one expert about a project that is impacting businesses today. Visit us at IoT1.com to learn more, or email me to start a discussion.
Welcome back to the Industrial IoT Spotlight podcast. I'm joined today by David King, CEO of Foghorn Systems. David was previously the co-founder, chairman, and CEO of Airtight Networks, which is now Mojo Networks. He was also the chairman, president, and CEO of Proxim Incorporated. Foghorn Systems is a leading developer of edge intelligence software for industrial and commercial IoT applications. They bring the power of machine learning and advanced analytics to the on-premise edge environment. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
So maybe as a starting point, if you could frame the value proposition for Foghorn, why did you start the company and what are the objectives?
Sure, happy to give you some background. So Foghorn, the name of the company itself comes from a term that was invented, I don't know, 7 or 8 years back by Cisco when they launched their Internet of Everything, their kind of pioneering initiative. And it was really describing fog computing, which is this layer of compute kind of closer to the edge of the network, as they describe it. And being a networking company, they obviously, you know, kind of nailed the networking part of that. What Foghorn was founded to do about 2.5, 3 years back by an incubator in Palo Alto focused on AI was to really flesh out what the computing aspect of fog computing, you know, really meant. And specifically, Foghorn's value proposition is to kind of turn the whole IoT model, as people thought about it, on its head, right? Really to come at it in a very disruptive way. So rather than just collecting a lot of industrial OT or operation technology data and somehow, you know, transport it, you know, over a network, a secure network to the cloud for processing, was to invent a brand new layer of compute technology that could be applied on the streaming data as it's being produced at the very, very edge, if you will, of the application of the network. So our software was designed to be purpose-built and designed from scratch to work on streaming data and to be able to apply very advanced big data technology like advanced analytics, machine learning, and AI on that streaming data. Right? So rather than getting the data streamed up to the source of intelligence, it's bringing the intelligence right down to the source of the data. And it's been a revolutionary kind of concept, which others have now resonated with, because now everybody's talking about, you know, doing edge computing or processing at the edge. Where a year ago, a year and a half ago, when we came out of stealth mode, I think we were the only ones really talking about doing it this way. So that's really the concept. The big idea is processing the data, delivering as much insight, intelligence as possible, as soon as the data is produced, so that you dramatically cut down the amount of kind of unnecessary data being shipped all over the place. It's a, not only dramatic reduction in bandwidth and cloud hosting costs for data center hosting costs, it's also dramatically better from a cybersecurity posture perspective, as well as, frankly, allowing now kind of real-time applications, latency-free applications to be delivered. So those are kind of the three big value propositions for this approach.
What are a few of the applications that would either be difficult to execute, high risk or high cost without computing on the edge? Are there a subset of applications that you really focus on right now when you're working with your first customers?
Yeah, so if you think about the world of IoT, a lot of the focus initially, especially from the Silicon Valley perspective where we, where we sit, was really on consumer type IoT applications, things like Fitbit wearable, watches, smartphone applications, Nest thermostats in your home, your Ring.com, camera sitting at your door. Those kind of applications, frankly, because all the data is persistently connected to the cloud, it's fairly uniform, what I call IT data, and all of the knowledge base was built in the cloud to begin with. The cloud really made a lot of sense to be the kind of the driving point of the technology and the delivery to the customer. In industrial settings, right, we're talking about, manufacturing, energy, kind of natural resource, production, distribution, smart city, smart building applications, and, intelligent vehicles, autonomous vehicles. When you start talking about industrial settings or industrial machines and processes, that's kind of where our technology fits, right? Because you now have a lot of, tremendous amount of OT data, operation technology data, already being produced by a vast number of sensors. That's what a lot of people call in the industrial world kind of the dark data, right? The dark, dirty data that's already being produced. And those systems are already being managed by, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of industrial control technology that's been developed to manage those machines, right? This is real-time closed-loop systems that have fairly simple thresholds or rules that, you know, decide when a machine needs to be, you know, the settings need to change or you need to turn off the machine or alert an operator, right, that the machine is malfunctioning. So the whole idea is rather than, you know, trying to get all of this dark, dirty OT data stream somewhere to a cloud, and, you know, in which case you've got a lot of latency that's already been introduced, and you're now talking about a tremendous amount of data, right? Whether it's a lot of physical sensors like temperature, pressure, you know, accelerometers, you know, vibration type sensors, or it's a new type of sensors in those environments like video and audio data. It's just way too much data to be shipping around the network. So the use cases really are, if you're talking about a remote environment like an oil field, a wind farm, right? A moving system like a, you know, a car, you know, a fleet vehicle like a bus or a truck, a train, an airline. An airline flight. Anytime you have either moving systems or outdoor remote systems, you know, it could be oil, gas, mining, agriculture, those types of environments, the bandwidth cost alone, right, and the bandwidth transport makes it prohibitive to think about transporting the data to a cloud. But, you know, the more common use case, even in an indoor setting like a factory or refinery, a hospital, you still have, even if you could say that the bandwidth was there and that you're still keeping all the data on premise, you're still shipping around network a lot of unnecessary data, and you're increasing the cybersecurity exposure of that data, right? So the whole point is, you know, to process the data, right, to apply the big data analytics, machine learning, and AI algorithms as quickly as possible to make the whole stack more efficient, right, to make the whole end-to-end application more efficient. It's not that we're trying to get rid of the cloud or get rid of the data center processing. It's we're just trying to make the metadata sent to those environments, right, a lot more valuable, right, and a lot more secure.
The industries that you're addressing, fairly broad range right now, and I suppose that makes sense. Your technology is quite horizontal. I'm sure you're working with customers in any case to develop algorithms for specific use cases on a somewhat of a case-by-case basis. But are there specific industries that have been early adopters of this or specific categories of companies? What are you seeing in terms, because obviously, as you said, you're one of the first movers here. This is a very early technology. What are you seeing from the early adopter side in terms of industry, in terms of the type of company, maybe in terms of the type of leader or decision maker who is pushing their company to look into this this new area?
Yeah, good, great question. So I've already talked a little bit about some of the early consumer use cases and kind of consumer companies, right, that got a lot of Silicon Valley attention. Now that a lot of folks are shifting to industrial, right, I think the first kind of obvious candidates, right, would be manufacturing oil and gas, right, where you've got, you know, manufacturing the $12 trillion global sector, right, the energy sector, you know, oil and gas, renewable energy is a $7 to $8 trillion economic sector. So there has been a lot of early attempts in the electric utility space, for example, right, way before Foghorn and edge computing came around, to do things like smart grid, right, where you wanted to get more knowledge about, you know, energy usage and energy management. There has been obviously some attempts to do, you know, smart city type programs. You know, Cisco, GE, there've been a lot of early kind of pilot programs or showcase programs in various cities to spotlight, you know, movement of traffic, right? You know, better public safety systems using IoT. But really, we're at a point now in the industry where, you know, where we thought the initial uptake would be in, you know, industries like manufacturing, oil and gas, and we have certainly seen a huge amount of traction in those markets. That these other sectors like transportation, you know, like smart buildings, you know, building automation and renewable energy, there's been a lot of demand in many more sectors than we would have guessed at this stage. And I think a lot of it is because there has been a lot of sandboxing and a lot of early kind of POC activity, right? Driven primarily, you know, developing algorithms in a cloud or data center environment. But as customers in all those different sectors are looking at a deployment, the whole idea of sending out all the data to the cloud and the cost associated with that and the security risk associated with that became kind of a barrier to adoption. So now with this movement, you know, that Foghorn has led towards edge intelligence or edge computing, I think it's actually helping break the logjam and allowing people to think about, you know, much more scalable deployments. So we're seeing interest in, you know, far more sectors than we've guessed. And it ranges from, you know, just condition monitoring and predictive maintenance of you know, of remote assets or distributed industrial assets to things like, you know, machine asset performance, you know, optimization, as well as process intelligence. So it's not just monitoring the equipment, making the equipment, you know, better and smarter. It's also about making the operator and the entire, you know, process of, you know, manufacturing or energy production, right, or movement of, you know, of transportation systems, you know, more effective and efficient. So we're just seeing this kind of, you know, 100 flowers blooming period where lots of use cases are popping up in many, many sectors, you know, literally hundreds, if not thousands of use cases in all these different domains.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the fascinating aspect of the industrial internet. It's, well, very similar to the internet that we all use on a daily basis, which is that every industry, every function is going to find some use case eventually, right? It's just a matter of finding the value and bringing the cost down and the complexity down so it makes sense to actually implement it. But the use cases are more or less limited by our imagination in any case. When you're covering new use cases, how horizontal is the platform? Is it that if you're moving from, let's say, manufacturing predictive maintenance and going into a transportation predictive maintenance case, that you're basically addressing that as a new problem because you have a new type of asset, new challenges, or is predictive maintenance similar across? I guess, how much are you working on a consultative basis and developing algorithms as you go, as opposed to having a software platform that is able to solve problems, maybe after a general problem has been solved first, customers are able to independently modify it?
Good, great question again. So the categories of use cases and problems, you know, I mentioned, you know, condition monitoring, predictive maintenance is kind of a basket of what I call low-hanging fruit. Everybody's got, you know, assets that, you know, have different characteristics. And so there absolutely is a need to do kind of consultative work to tailor the algorithms, right, to make it much more machine specific, and not just, you know, machines of a certain type, but even specific machines. And so when you talk about, you know, manufacturing, you're literally talking about hundreds, if not thousands, of different kinds of machines, right? You think about CNC milling machines, injection molding machines, you know, heat treat ovens, winding machines. You know, there's just so many different kinds of machines that you can talk about predictive maintenance as a broad category of use cases and applications. But the specific algorithms, even down to the specific type of machine, right, needs to be really customized. And so there's definitely a consultative aspect. So our technology, as you rightly point out, is very horizontal in that you can use our complex event processing engine to do very complex analytics, you know, rules-based analytics, as well as aligning data for machine learning and AI algorithms, right? So that's the generic or horizontal part of it. But the specific use of it varies very much use case by use case, customer by customer. So, you know, that's why we have taken very much an approach of building an ecosystem of partners, whether they're big industrial companies like the GEs and Honeywells and Bosches and Yokogawas that are all investors in our company and OEM partners, or it's the big, you know, SIs, whether the global folks, you know, like the, you know, the Accentures and PwCs and TCSs and Tech Mahindras of the world, or regional, you know, vertically specific integrators that have solutions and professional services targeted at specific industries. We absolutely need those folks to help, you know, for deployment and scaling purposes. But it's also, you know, true that the companies like the Intel, the Dells were investors of the company, the HPEs, as well as the cloud providers, right? Whether it's AWS, right, or, you know, folks doing data science in the cloud, they're also ecosystem partners as well. Everybody brings their specific set of products and services, solutions to the end customer. But for industrial as opposed to consumer IoT, it does take an ecosystem of partners. It, as somebody said, it takes a village. It takes a village of partners to really develop the end-to-end value proposition in many cases for the customer.
Yeah, that's a great point. That I think this is something that a lot of companies actually do struggle with in the industrial IoT space, is that especially smaller companies that are developing technologies that solve a particular spot problem then have to build the ecosystem around that technology so they can actually sell it. Because at the end of the day, a customer doesn't want to purchase a collection of products and integrate them. They want to purchase a solution. And maybe we can then take some time and talk through how you engage with customers. Because I guess we have kind of two types of ecosystems here. We have certainly the ecosystem of companies that are providing technology into the solution and working with Foghorn on implementation. And then on the customer side, we now have situations where maybe the IT department, maintenance, production is all getting involved. It might be possible that a business unit's also getting involved. And so you have decision-making, operating, financing of the product kind of spread among different stakeholders. What does a typical deployment look from a stakeholder perspective on both the supply and the customer side?
Another extra question. So we will start, it can start anywhere. It can start from the line of business or what I call the operation side of the house where there's a particular problem or, a use case. So typically what we're looking for in the early days is either a high value or a high volume problem that we can help a business address. And that will typically a line of business or we call an OT, an operation technology person that identifies. And that could be, the machine downtime, right, where there's, product failure or machine failure occurring in a production process, right, or an energy production process where you have a particular type of equipment, whether it's, let's say an electrical submersible, an ESP, an electric submersible pump, a compressor, a valve that fails frequently and needs to be, maintained a lot more, a lot more intelligently. It could be a process, right, where you get a lot of scrap out of the production process because there's, failure conditions occurring that are not being identified. And I'll talk about a use case later, that might be an illustration of that. It could be a piece of equipment that's just very, very difficult to monitor because it's very remote and you're not getting very good data about the condition of that machine. So depending on the use case and, the operating environment, it could come from the line of business folks. Often, however, today, it's the IT, it's the digital transformation part of the company, right? The chief digital officer that's been brought on board working with IT, trying to figure out how to apply, modern big data technology to, to business problems. So we might get introduced by the IT side of the house, working in conjunction, say, with a big SI, or it could be, the operation side of the house, working with a big industrial partner that identifies the use cases. So at Foghorn, we're working a lot with, directly within customers at the POC phase to identify these high value or high volume use cases to do a POC. But as it moves to deployment and certainly to scale and then spreading, both for into other use cases, that's really where partners come in because, we're a startup company working with really gigantic companies, right? So one of our investors, for example, recently that co-led our Series B round was Saudi Aramco, right? They co-led it with Intel, which is about, two giant companies, but from very, very different domains, right? Intel being a hardcore deep technology, company, and Saudi Aramco being the world's largest, oil and gas company, in fact, the world's largest company, period. And so working directly with Aramco on literally hundreds, soon probably thousands of different use cases, but depending on the use case, whether it's upstream, midstream, or downstream, it may be a different set of partners that we work with, right, to prove it out and deploy it. Right? It could be a big industrial company, and there's, fortunately for us, partner with a lot of our existing investors and partners like GE, like Honeywell, like Yokogawa, or it could be a big SI. We work with almost all the major global SIs on different projects. So it really depends on, where we get introduced and what the use case is. But I would say at the end of the day, really part of the magic of what I think Foghorn brings to the market is that we're bringing, IT technology right down to that IT-OT, partitioning, right? And I call it the blood-brain barrier. Our technology really does fuse together, right, IT technology and brings it, and delivers value to the OT, the operator in the environment. And so to that extent, we always have both OT and IT people involved in every engagement.
Great. Thank you for the very clear answer. David, I want to transition now to the second section, doing more of a deep dive into your technology. Before we move over to that section, which will be published later in the week on Wednesday after this first section is published, how can companies get in touch with your team? What's the best way to get engaged, whether it's from the SI perspective, whether it's somebody that's looking at contacting Foghorn about a deployment?
Yeah, so you can certainly reach out to us over the, our website actually has a nice kind of a sign-up place, a registration area where whether it's a partner or an end customer or, just a consultant, we get a lot of outreach, especially since, a lot of funding announcements and the ecosystem announcements we made recently, we get a lot of outreach, so we're a startup company based in, heart of Silicon Valley here in downtown Mountain View, but I'd say 99% of the companies we work with have come to us either over the web or through a partner.
Awesome. Well, David, thanks for sharing the overview of your business, how you work with customers for this first section. Very much looking forward to the deep dive into the technology.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at IoT1HQ and to check out our database of case studies on IoT1.com. We help to accelerate digital transformation by advising business leaders on how to integrate IoT technologies into their operations and products. We appreciate your thoughts, suggestions, and of course your reviews. And if you have an interesting project, we'd love to feature you on a future edition. You can write me at eric.walenza@iot1.com.